Hello, and welcome to In the Privy Council, a podcast reviewing cases heard before the Judicial Committee of His Majesty's Most Honorable Privy Council, brought to you by the Legal Style Blog. I'm your host, Elijah Granite. This week, we are discussing the Bahamian case of Watson and the King, the citation for which is 2023 UKPC 32, Bahamas. This is a criminal case dealing with a fundamental bedrock of the law, natural justice. The story begins in 2003, when Roger Watson used a high-powered rifle to fire into the home of one Mr. Pinder, with whom he was apparently having a dispute. One of these shots hit and killed a 12-year-old child, Master Edward Curtis Johnson, who was sitting in the living room at the time. Consequently, Watson was tried for murder before a jury and convicted by unanimous verdict. As capital punishment is legal in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, the trial judge then sentenced him to death. Watson appealed his conviction to the Court of Appeal on a ground that may require some explanation for non-Bahamian listeners. In England, the specific intent for murder can also be established by the intent to commit grievous bodily harm. So, if the defendant stabs the victim with the intent to seriously injure him, and the victim dies, that is murder under English law. However, in the Bahamas, the intent required for murder is specifically the intent to kill. Mere recklessness is not sufficient. Consequently, the Court of Appeal found that the trial judge had misdirected the jury by suggesting, inter alia, that inferred recklessness as to a risk for life could establish intent for murder. Therefore, the court substituted a conviction for manslaughter and sentenced Watson to a term of 50 years imprisonment. As an outcome, that sentence is perhaps unsurprising, albeit with a rather long custodial tariff, given that Watson had used a firearm to kill an innocent child. But today, we're concerned with the process, not the end result. The Court of Appeal gave no reasons in its judgment for the substituted sentence. The Court of Appeal also did not invite any submissions as to the length of sentence, and did not give the appellant, or his counsel, any opportunity to address that question. The sentence also did not credit the appellant for the 3 years he spent in custody, awaiting trial, and then after his initial conviction. On these grounds, Watson appealed to His Majesty in Council, which is where we pick up the case. For the board, my lord, Lord Lloyd Jones, began by considering the failure of the Court of Appeal to hear any submissions on the sentence length. His lordship began by noting that no matter how open and shut a case may seem, no matter how guilty the defendant may appear, and indeed be, a case is never so open and shut it doesn't need submissions. Thus, the Court of Appeal had plainly committed a major breach of procedural fairness. The next stage in the analysis was to determine if this breach was injurious to the defendant, or, put alternately, if Watson could have, by submissions, plausibly changed anything about his final sentence or otherwise changed the quality of justice. This intersects with the other prong of the natural justice claim, the failure of the Court of Appeal to give reasons. Counsel for the Crown, Mr. Rowing Pennington Benton, argued that the Court of Appeal had simply adopted the findings of the trial judge, and therefore the culpability of the defendant and the sentencing principles could simply be carried over without further elaboration. The board was not convinced by this specious argument. For a start, murder and manslaughter are different offenses with different elements, and so the factual basis for culpability in one is distinct to culpability in the other. Furthermore, manslaughter sentencing in the Bahamas is often in the range of 18 to 35 years imprisonment, and proceedings under this very distinct set of criteria and practice are rather distinct to murder. Finally, the Court of Appeal itself, by rejecting the trial judge's rulings that inferred intention for murder, actually undermined the entire basis of the trial judge's findings. Consequently, when sentencing for manslaughter, as opposed to murder, the underlying facts were radically different. So, having lost on that point, counsel for the Crown further argued that the points about mitigation had already been raised before the trial court. Yet, the submissions on mitigation for murder did not excuse the Court of Appeal failing to hear submissions on mitigation for manslaughter. They changed circumstances of the conviction and of the rulings as to the defendant's mens rea, combined with the fact that the precedent and guidance for determining the gravity of manslaughter differ wildly from murder, meant that this was a case where it was especially vital the defendant be allowed to address the court as to sentencing. Furthermore, the Court of Appeal, in its gnomic sentencing, consisting of really nothing more than a sentence changing the term of imprisonment to 50 years, did not even refer to the trial judge's findings. So the ground was meretricious in any case. The next argument raised by the Crown was that in various capital cases heard before the board involving excessive delay to carrying out executions, a life sentence had been substituted for capital punishment without the need for further submissions. However, these cases were simply not applicable, since they involved not an appeal against sentence, but rather circumstances where carrying out the original, perfectly lawful sentence of death was no longer constitutional because of the factors involved with essentially torturing someone by keeping them awaiting execution for a matter of years. Thus, it was not a resentencing, but rather adjusting a lawful sentence so as to be constitutional. Thus, this was again a specious and irrelevant ground. The board then returned to the point of reasons, and here His Lordship emphasized the crucial necessity of giving reasons, writing, quote, "It is a basic requirement of procedural fairness that a sentencing tribunal should give reasons for the sentence imposed, in particular so that the defendant may be aware of the gravity of his wrongdoing, and so that he may be advised as to possible grounds of appeal. It is also important that victims and the public should be made aware of the reasons why a sentence has been imposed. Reasons need not be extensive, but they must meet these basic requirements." Clearly, in this case, the sentencing exercise for manslaughter was so distinct to the trial judge's murder sentencing that reasons were required. Furthermore, the sentence for manslaughter was so aberrantly high above the normal upper range for manslaughter by some 15 years was yet another factor crying out for reasons. Thus, the natural justice grounds alone were sufficient for the board to find the sentence needed to be quashed. Lord Lloyd-Jones then briefly considered the point that, contrary to accepted case law in the Bahamas, the resentencing court failed to give him credit for the 3 years he spent in custody, and, thus, this ground alone was sufficient to allow the appeal as well. Thus, the board humbly advised His Majesty to allow the appeal and quash the sentence of 50 years imprisonment, and further, that the case should be remitted to the Court of Appeal so that Watson could receive a new sentence, this time after being allowed to make submissions. Let us turn now to our analysis of the case. As a starting point, this case is a reminder that, although it may be a fairly vague and, yes, often misused concept, natural justice matters. The basic procedural guarantees are integral parts of a just proceeding, and any court which disregards them has failed in its most fundamental tasks. The breach is here, whereby the Court of Appeal, without any reasoning, and without caring to even hear any submissions, simply pulled a harsh sentence out of a hat, are especially severe, and raise grave concerns about the practice of the Court of Appeal. It also reminds us that everyone has a right to be heard, and that includes people as reprehensible as Watson. And make no mistake, Watson is a reprehensible child killer. The reason the protection of the law, as guaranteed by His Majesty the King's Fons Justitiae, applies so firmly even to the worst of criminals, is because absent submissions, we cannot ever be quite sure as to who really is the worst of criminals, and who is in fact mischaracterized and misrepresented. Lord Lloyd-Jones cited this quotation from Mr. Justice McGarry, as he then was, which perfectly captures the sentiment. Quote, "As everybody who has anything to do with the law well knows, the path of the law is strewn with examples of open and shut cases which, somehow, were not, of unanswerable charges which, in the event, were completely answered, of inexplicable conduct which was fully explained, of fixed and unalterable determinations that, by discussion, suffered a change." That quotation being from John and Rees, 1970, Chancery, page 345 and page 402. Finally, the duty to give reasons is as important as the duty to hear submissions. This matters, as the board reminded us, not only for the defendant, but also for the victim's family and the public at large to understand why and how a decision was reached. Judges are not oracles, and they do not hand down revelation needing no explanation as to the correct sentence. Our system of common law depends on working from precedents, with reason, to arrive at fairly predictable outcomes. And where a sentence just appears ex nihilo, this has failed. The courtroom is a public place of conversation, where all involved can be heard and equally hear. In this, it is as important to hear from the judge as it is from counsel. Thank you very much for listening to another episode of In the Privy Council, brought to you by the Legal Style Blog. I have been your host, Elijah Granite. If you want more legal content, visit our website, legalstyle.co.uk, or follow us on Twitter at Legal Style Blog. If you have any comments, suggestions, rants, or raves, the email of the podcast is editor@legalstyle.co.uk. We also welcome any ratings or reviews on your usual podcast platforms. Until next time, goodbye, and God save the King.